Mark chapter 11. We're going to read starting in verse 27 of Mark chapter 11, but we're actually going to begin in Mark chapter 14 and verse 48. Just to give a piece of information that will be important for you to understand what's going on in the big picture. All right, everybody find those. Before we stand, I want to say this. I want to say thank you to several people here. Number one, I want to say thank you to all of you who prayed for my mother-in-law. She's had a pretty rough time. Our vacation was, somebody asked me, did we have a good vacation? And then the best way to describe it is we had a different vacation. First week wasn't bad. Second week was pretty hairy. You know, when you find out your mother's in the hospital and in intensive care and going to have surgery, and she's almost 90. So my wife, you know, she has great faith in God, but I don't. So she ended up coming home early. So it was a different vacation. So I appreciate you who prayed. She is in rehab. I mean, she's got a long way to go. You don't bounce back at 90. Some folks don't bounce back at 50. So we appreciate you praying for her. Secondly, I appreciate the people who led the church when I'm gone. We do not have a one-man dog and pony show here. We have guys that are actually pastors functioning as pastors. And Pastor Koch always does a good job, and I really appreciate he is probably at his best preaching on Father's Day. Since the 20-plus years I have been here, he has preached 19 of them on Father's Day. So if he's not an expert on that, he never will be. Brian, I heard, is Brian up here? Where did he go? You don't know where he's at. I heard he did a pretty good job when I was gone, so I wanted to say thanks to him. And Noel, I know he does a good job, and I want to say thanks to you. I had several people tell me it was interesting and good, so appreciate that. And I also appreciate Brian. I know why he's not here, because I got a call from Christy last week, and she said Brian was in your office. First problem. Second problem, and Brian, this is what she told me, broke my computer. So my computer crashed and burned while I was on vacation, and Brian is the cause. All right, anyhow, let's stand, please. Mark chapter 14, verse 48 and 49. We are not going to discuss the entire gospel this morning. We're going to discuss a very pointed question. But it's important that you know that Matthew, Mark, and Luke follow a similar pattern. But unfortunately, they follow a very specific pattern that leaves a lot of things out. John follows a very different path and tells you that Jesus went to Jerusalem on Passover minimally three times, maybe five times. Matthew, Mark, and Luke talk about one time. So they're very big difference. You know, they just look at things differently. Verse 48. And Jesus answered and said unto them, are you come out against a thief, or a bandit is probably a better word, with swords and staves to take me, clubs? This verse is very important. Everything in Mark that's preceded, it's specifically when Jesus goes into the temple the first time, you got to get this verse or you miss the point. I was daily with you, you know, you all, in the temple teaching, and you took not me not, but the scriptures must be fulfilled. Now, look at verse 27 of chapter 11. You say, why do I read this? If you just read this story in Mark, you think Jesus is just talking to the Jewish leadership. Look up here, folks. It's one of the best teaching methods of your children. You talk to someone else, and your child listens in. The whole crowd was listening in, and Jesus was there teaching and talking. Sometimes it seems like he's just talking to a small group, but in reality, lots of folks are hearing what's happening. That's what I want you to get. Verse 27. Verse 27 and following is not my favorite text, but it has a question that must be answered, and it might be the most important. No, it might not be. It is the most important question of anybody's life. You say salvation? There's a question more important than that. It's the one that happens before that. You'll understand. And they, meaning the disciples and Jesus, come again to Jerusalem. And as he was walking in the temple, now it narrows down to just Jesus, there come to him the chief priest and the scribes and the elders. Those three groups represent the leadership of the Jewish people. The priestly group, I think in other texts it might be represented by the Sadducees. The scribes, probably representing the Pharisees, and just the political leaders, the elders. And say unto him, by what authority doest thou these things? By what authority? They are getting to the core of every question. Please look at me. The core of every question in your life is going to come down to a very simple thing, a matter of authority. Please look at me. Who's in charge? To whom do you and I bow the knee? Let me ask in a different way. Can you truly get saved and not bow the knee to Jesus? Of course not. But we have that teaching floating all over America, you know, get saved and bow the knee to Jesus some other time. No, before you come to get saved, friend, there is the question. You don't even have to speak about it. We'll get to it. It's inherent in everything. Who's in charge? By what authority? Let's continue reading. By what authority doest thou these things? And, or but, could be, it's kind of an elevated statement. Who gave thee this authority to do these things? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I will also ask of you one question, and answer me. I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, meaning John's entire ministry represented by his baptism, where he was pointing people to Christ and that Christ was the Messiah, and that people were going to identify with the Christ, the Messiah, that was going to come, which was Jesus. The baptism of John, was it from heaven? Did it find its source in God? From heaven is the circumlocution, a roundabout way of saying God. And Jewish people didn't always want to say God, so they would circle the wagons and say heaven. So, did his authority come from heaven, from God, or does it come or of men? Answer me. Well, they reasoned with themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? But if we shall say of men, and it doesn't really finish their thought, but it makes a comment saying, well, they feared the people, for all the men, all the people, counted John that he was a prophet indeed. So they were in a bind. They couldn't say that John's authority came from heaven, because then they would have to what? See, look at me, friend. I don't want to bore you, but our problem is in American Christianity is we want to get Jesus, get our get-out-of-hell card, stick it in our pocket. But there's a question that's always asked, and it's asked of anybody that's dealing with salvation. It's this matter of authority. They realized if we admit the authority of John the Baptist, then we have to believe what he said and obey what he said. They couldn't do that. But they didn't want to say he didn't come from God, because if they said that, the people might get mad. So, well, what did they say? Verse 33, and they answered and said unto Jesus, the King James says, we cannot tell. Greek says, we don't know. Boy, that's a terrible place for leaders of the country to be in. I don't know. Continues, and Jesus answering saith unto them, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. This morning we're going to walk down a path. It's a very simple path. This is not very sermonic this morning, but it is a path that's going to come to this question. Please look at me. I believe there's only one question. I believe it's the question that was asked in the Garden of Eden. Yea, hath God said, is there an authority that you are willing to bow to? Or are you your own authority? Do you do whatever's right in your eyes? It always comes down to a simple question of authority. By what authority? We're going to pray and get started this morning. Father, I ask your blessings on this time. Lord, this is a very difficult passage to get at in some ways, to make it sermonic in a way where we can understand. I would ask that you would do that which I seem to have not been able to do, to bring these ideas to home in every life in this room. Undoubtedly, there are many, many, and maybe most Christians in this room. But undoubtedly, there are some who are not Christians. There are some who have never bowed the knee to the authority of you. And there are some that struggle in their life because they keep wanting to be their own authority. Help us to deal with this central issue as we listen in to the story. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. By what authority? I believe this is the oldest question of mankind. When the question was asked, yea or yes, has God said? It is the ongoing question of mankind. We never get away from it. And in some ways, it is the only question of mankind. Will you and I bow the knee? Or is Christianity nothing more than, I like the jokes at that church, and we have humor here. Is that what Christianity is? Or is Christianity a relationship with you and God through Christ where you have bowed before him? I want to give two very different examples, if I might, to open the sermon this morning. One of them happened last week. I get a little confused on dates. Last week, the Supreme Court handed down a decision. Kind of. Four judges said no, four judges said yes. Which meant because there was a tie and there was not someone to break the tie, the decision of the lower court stood. What was it about? I want you to actually listen. This is not an anti-Obama statement this morning, though I can make plenty of those. This is just factual. This is what it calls, Louis, being an American. President Obama, a while back, had issued what he called an executive order. He got on television and specifically said, Congress has not and will not act on immigration. Therefore, he, as the president, would make an executive order and he would act on immigration. By the way, I'm opposed, as a pastor and as a Christian, to the Republican Party's view of immigration, about 100%. Which, by the way, what view is it? We do nothing. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, look at me, authority. Over 20 states banded together and brought lawsuit against President Obama. It went through lower courts and made its way all the way to the Supreme Court. And it got down to this. Look at me, not whether you agree with Obama or disagree with Obama. That's not the question. The state said, the president of the United States does not have the authority to do what? To make law. Now, folks, it's been a week or two since I was in junior high. Brother, you didn't want to tell me what year you were here. Well, I'm older than you, I think. I think it's been 50 years, a little less than 50 years since I was in a government class. But I'm pretty sure back in government class in the Dark Ages, they taught us something like this. The Congress makes the law. The president enforces the law and puts it out there in the details how it's going to work. And he can also have an agenda. He can have policies. He can promote things. But he has no ability to make law. That's Congress. President promotes the laws, enforces the laws, that sort of thing. And then there's the group, the Supreme Court, who does what? They evaluate whether those laws that Congress has passed are constitutional or not. I think I learned that in, what year, Sparky, what year did you learn that? Seventh grade. So yeah, it's been a long time. Seventh or eighth grade, somewhere back when you do government. Now, there's another party in this mix called the people. If the people don't like what the Supreme Court does, the people have the ability to change the Constitution. You do know that. So, last week, I think it was last week, the Supreme Court voted. Listen very specifically to the question. This president or any president, Democrat or Republican, have the authority to make law? Four of them, are you listening? Said yes. I'm like, what constitution have you been reading? That's the very nature of America. It's called balance of powers. Four of them said no. You say, what was the result? His law was his law that he created was shut down. But really, behind all of it was a question: where does authority lie in government in the United States? Does it lie with Congress? Does it lie with Supreme Court? Does it lie with the president? Or, amazingly, does it lie with the people? And we're still not sure. Now, I'm going to bring this down a little bit more personal. A teenager in Bible class, it always happens. Pastor Kowak, I know it's happened to you. Brian, you're nicer than me, but it'll happen to you if it hasn't. Rick Melvin was a magnet for this stuff. I mean, Rick was like a huge magnet that just sucked kids into saying this. You'll be teaching on no drinking, premarital sex, the kind of music you listen to, and inevitably some person will look at you and say, Pastor Warren, who gives you the... Or they will probably not say authority. They'll say, what gives you the right to judge me? Do you understand the question that's being asked? It's a question of authority. By what authority? Now, some kids won't ask the question, what gives you the right? We had one girl that graduated from here 4 or 5 years ago. She would say this once a day to me. What gives you the right? You just don't like my music. Some people will say things like, whatever. Or I had some students that used to say, so what's the big deal? It was all the same question. Look, if you would, Mark chapter 11. Let's move through. By the way, the first 2 points will be so quick you won't even know they happened if you're not listening. Mark chapter 11, please, and verse 11. When we come to the question of authority, I want to get to the last of this, but I have to kind of, you know, build up to it. Why does this question come up here in Mark? It comes up here because of the issue of the temple. Mark chapter 11 and verse 11, note the verse. It says, Jesus entered into Jerusalem and into the temple. And it says, and when he had looked around about upon all things, and now the eventide was come, he went out into Bethany with the 12. Jesus showed up in Jerusalem. It was late in the afternoon. He walks into the temple. He kind of looks what's happening. As he looks around at what's going on, he noted, by the way, what was going on? Buying, selling, animals, animal sounds, what animals do, and it's all being done in the temple. He sees it. He leaves. He's coming back. Verse 15, please. Verse 15. It says, and they come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple. See, the day before he's come, he's observed things. Now he's coming back into the temple, and he's going to do something radical. By the way, point number one is this. Jesus, by the time we get to the story we read today, had already questioned their authority, the authority of the chief priest, the authority of the Sadducees, the authority of the Pharisees, the authority of the politicians. He had already questioned their authority twice. He had questioned their authority. Verse 15. They come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple, and he began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple. Can you imagine, friend? He starts picking people up and throwing them out. He had never gone to the Joel Osteen school of how to be nice to people. Casting out means throwing people out. He's doing that. It says, he began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple. He overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. And he would not suffer or allow any that should carry any vessel through the temple. He not only starts challenging and questioning their authority, he throws people out, he overturns tables, he takes people and literally moves them out. And in verse 16, he forbids people. Can you imagine, you come to worship. Look up here. You come to pray and to sing. And there's animals over there making noise. And Cliff over here, he forgot to bring his little sheep. And there's a sheep over here going, buh, buh. And Cliff wants a sheep. And right in the middle, you're trying to worship God. And the money guy just brings the sheep. Here's your, and they're talking, and you're trying to pray, and you're trying to communicate with God, or maybe you're a Gentile trying to learn who God is, and all you're hearing is sheep and talking and movement and nonsense. Listen, Jesus, by this point, had already challenged their authority twice. Here, I'll talk about in a moment the rest. Let's continue looking. Oh, by the way, you don't think this didn't challenge people's authority? Go back to the Reformation. There were pastors, Christians, that would go into Roman Catholic churches when people were doing all this foolishness and doing all the hocus pocus, and they would interfere. How do you think, what happened to those Christians? By the way, folks, people don't like their authority challenged. No one likes it challenged. Verse 17, then he even starts speaking, and he says, and he taught, saying unto them, is it not written, it's written in Isaiah 56:7, my house shall be called of all, meaning for all nations, by all nations, the house of prayer. This was to be the place where Gentiles could come and learn about God and learn about the only way to God was through sacrifice. And instead of praying and learning about God, it says, you have made it a den of thieves. My friend, by this point that they come to Jesus, Jesus had already questioned their authority twice. He questioned it at the end of his ministry, and he also questioned at the beginning. If you would turn your Bibles, we'll come right back here to John chapter 2. Would you look at John chapter 2, please? John chapter 2. John chapter 2 and verse 18. By the way, this is very early in Jesus' ministry. At the very beginning of his ministry, I think it was his first trip as an adult, as he is starting to fulfill his purposes, as he's looking forward to the cross. At the very beginning of his ministry, he came to the temple and cleansed the temple. John chapter 2 and verse 18. Would you look there? Then answered the Jews and said unto him, nope, you know what? I'm too far. Excuse me. I'm sorry. It's verse, 13. Verse 13. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. By the way, folks, when it says changers of money, it's talking about people that change whatever currency you have into this currency. I want to ask you a question. When's the last time you've been to an airport? Anybody? 3 weeks ago, my wife and I flew out of O'Hare Airport. I went to buy two bottles of water for Jenny and I. I can tell some of you haven't flown. It was like I didn't want to spend my whole paycheck on two bottles of water. It was like $8 and something for two bottles of water at O'Hare. I'm like, what's in this water? And I drank it. It was just water. They're not just talking about come here and exchange your money. Everything was extortion. Everything was, it was criminal. You came here, you had a little bit of money, you had to pay a certain tax if you were Jewish, and you maybe bought an animal, and everything was like, you want how much? By the way, when's the last time you ate at an airport? One time, Jenny and I were kicked off a flight in Miami, wasn't it? And they gave us vouchers, and it was like $40. I thought, I can buy six lunches. Not in an airport. We didn't even get the whole meal purchased. I had to add money to it. By the way, that's what's going on here. Let's continue reading, please. says he found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep. Can you imagine they're right in the temple and there's animals here? And doves and the changers of money sitting. And in this passage it says he made a scourge, a whip of small cords. And can you imagine Jesus making this? He's just sitting there putting this together, looking at these idiots, and they're wondering what he's going to do. I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's going to whack somebody. You say, by what authority do you do that? Look at me. What gives you the right to say this? That's the question, friend. It goes on to say, he drove them all out of the temple and the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overthrew the tables and said to them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my father's house an house of merchandise. And his disciples remembered that is written, the zeal of thine house has eaten me up. Now, I want to say this and we're going to move on to point number two. Jesus was questioning two times the corruption, the greed, the buying and selling, the movement of animals and the sounds of animals. And forgive me, friend, have you been in an open-air market? My wife and I, we're weird. I'm the weird one she follows. I like open-air markets, but you can always smell where the animals are. And you can smell as you're walking to the animals, especially the birds. That's all going on. Here I am praying. Yuck. Here I am trying to sing. Buh, buh. All this stuff is going on, buying and selling and noise and animals doing their business. And Jesus runs that out. He rids the place of corruption and greed, the constant buying and selling. He even gets to the purpose of the temple. The temple's purpose was a place of prayer where Gentiles could come and come to know God. And of course, then at the heart of this, he gets to this issue that the very purpose of the temple was to include all the nations of the earth. But the nations of the earth got to stand over in the corner where all the animals were and get to hear all this junk. He clears that out because this place was made for a place of prayer for all nations. They don't like this. Now, I have to read something. This is for all of your benefit that are interested. You don't mind. This is a commentary on Mark, the New International Greek Commentary. It's actually pretty good on the whole, by a gentleman by the name of France. Are you ready? I have just told you Jesus cleansed the temple twice, once at the beginning, once at the end, yes? In his footnote, and I have found this footnote now quoted in about a half a dozen places, he says this. He says, such a climactic challenge to the temple and its authorities could not have been ignored. I agree. Leaving Jesus to continue his activity as nothing had happened. The suggestion, still sometimes met as an attempt to harmonize Mark and John, that it happened twice, is about as probable as the Normandy landings taking place both at the beginning and at the end of the Second World War. So he denies there were two cleansings of the temple. Or for you Americans, Louis, the first major battle in the Battle of the Civil War was the Battle of Bull Run or Manassas Junction. I believe, I could be wrong because I haven't looked this up in 20 years, I believe the battle started in April of 1861. In the spring of 1862, we had a second battle called Bull Run or Manassas Junction, in the same place. My friend, Jesus cleansed the temple twice. At the beginning of his ministry, he wanted to bring that temple back to the place to serve the purpose that it was ordained for. And guess what? He cleansed it, but I guarantee you 5 minutes later, they were right back in there with the animals, exchanging money. Then he comes back at the end of his earthly ministry. And by this time, he's no longer this whippersnapper from Galilee. He's no longer an unknown person. He is well known. When he comes in and cleanses it the second time, that's the end of the deal. From that point on, it's going to be death for Jesus, humanly speaking. Humanly speaking. Look back at Mark chapter 11, please. And I'm going to hurry because I want to get actually to the third point, which is where we live. Mark chapter 11, verse 27, if you would. So I have said Jesus had already questioned their authority twice. at the beginning of his ministry and at the end of his ministry. But the one at the end was much more significant because now they know who he is. He's established. They've heard his teaching. They've heard his preaching. They've seen his miracles. Now they're infuriated. So verse 27 and 28, now it's the authorities questioning Jesus' authority. Before, it's him questioning them. Now they want to turn the tables. So in verse 27, it says, they come again to Jerusalem as he was walking in the temple. There come to him the chief priest and the scribes and the elders, and saying to him, by what authority doest thou these things? What is your authority? And if I can say this, the word and means and, but it can also mean but, it can mean or, it can mean many things in Greek. Chi means a lot of different things. The idea being is these are not exactly equal. I think he's asking a question, and then he's kind of building on the question. By what authority do you have the right to cleanse this temple? And then they add up to this. Oh, by the way, where did you get this authority? You didn't get it from us, and we're the people with the authority. Look at me. We're the people in charge. We're the people that have the authority over the temple, not you. Look, if you would, to verse 27. Notice the groups. It mentions chief priest. The chief priest was a priestly family, actually, the family of Annas. You find Annas mentioned in other gospels. By the way, you also find Caiaphas mentioned. The high priest at this time was Caiaphas. I'm assuming you know this, but Annas was really the man in charge. Annas was the high priest. Caiaphas officially was the high priest. That's the reason you see confusion. And Annas and seven of his sons became high priest, and his son-in-law Caiaphas. But how did they become high priest? Did God choose them? They came to Jesus. Who gave you the authority to do this? Were the people in charge? No, they weren't in charge. Annas, Caiaphas, his seven sons, they were appointed, let me think, by God? Oh, by the Romans. So in reality, when they're questioning Jesus' authority, they don't have any authority. They have authority only as the Roman government gives them. So they were people that were political stooges. They were people making money out of this. This was their source of income. This was their source of influence. This was their source of power. And they're trying to question Jesus. I won't say anything more about that. We'll go on to the last point because this is where the action is. Look at verse 29. Jesus, strangely enough, does not answer them. Have you ever read this and wonder why he doesn't just say, I get my authority from my Father God. I am very God of... Why doesn't he just answer? Because we come back to the question, by what authority? Look at verse 29. Jesus answered and said to them, I will also ask of you one question. And answer me. Answer me. And I will tell you by what authority I do these things. So I'm going to ask you a question. If you answer my question, I'll tell you by what authority I do this. And then he moves from that point to the next point. He says, the baptism of John, was it from heaven? Was it from God? Or was it from men or of men? Look at me. Have you ever heard Pastor Warren look at you and say, answer me? Do you know why I say that? Because, my friend, it doesn't do you any good to collect dirt on a pew, to shine the seat. There has to come a time when you bring your life and say, is it this or is it this? John's ministry, by the way, he didn't have to use John. He could have used Isaiah. He could have used Jeremiah. He could have used Ezekiel. He could have used any one of the prophets. But he starts with John. Why? Because you either have to decide. John's authority came from God. Therefore, his ministry came from God. Therefore, you must believe what he says. Or you have to say his authority came from himself or other people. Therefore, you don't have to believe. So he traps them in a this or that question. look what happens. Verse 31, people aren't stupid. Did you know people are, it's kind of weird. Troy, this morning Sunday school, my number one impression wasn't the one you wanted to give me. My number one impression was Americans don't have an attention span of 30 years to work on a Bible. I don't hardly know any people that have a 30-year attention span. Do you know that? 30 minutes? Maybe? They start thinking about this. So look what it says. And I'm going to apply this to our life, friend. It says they reason within themselves, saying, well, if we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? There's a logic here, friend. Once you understand this man, John the Baptist, and his ministry, the authority of his ministry came from heaven, the moment you admit the authority is God's authority, then you must believe and obey. You must. It's inevitable. And they understood that. If I don't believe, I mean, if I admit that he came from God, then I've got to believe what he said, I've got to obey what he said. On the other hand, if we say his ministry, his message didn't come from God, they're afraid of the people. So they literally come to this conclusion. Look what it says. Verse 33. They answered and said unto him, the King James says, and it's fine, we cannot tell. The Greek says, can you imagine this is the leadership of the country? Greek is just stated a little differently. We don't know. And Jesus answering said unto them, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. I'm going to give you my third point and illustrate. I said, number one, Jesus had already questioned their authority twice. Number two, the authorities now question Jesus' authority. Number three, the question of authority can never be decided. Everyone look up here. If you're debating who's in charge, and you're debating, am I going to obey Jesus? You do realize the problem. Who's the authority? Jesus or? Answer the question. Jesus or yourself? The issue of authority can never be decided as long as you are the authority of your life. The only way authority can ever be decided is you must bow before the authority, because if the authority is from God, I'm no longer the authority. Here's my problem. There are people that come to this church that think they're in charge of their life. I'm the one. I make the decisions. You understand? By very nature, a Christian is someone who says, I have bowed the knee. He's the authority. So the question of authority, the reason Jesus doesn't just answer it is because you can't come to a conclusion on this question as long as you're the authority making the decision. Somewhere along the line, you've got to bow the knee. Let me illustrate, may I? I'm going to confuse this story. So if anybody comes to me and says, who was that story about? I can tell you, you would never know. I was on the phone in the last 6 months with a person, pretty smart person. The person was asking me about Christianity. And the person was smart enough to have gone to college and graduated and had a brain, I guess. And the person understood science, worked in the science field. The person wanted to talk to me about evolution, creation. Now, some of you are so dumb, that's not the proper term, excuse me, naive, that you think this would be a discussion about creation and evolution. Folks, the discussion's never about creation and evolution. The discussion's always about, why do you think this guy rejected God? Because he had some questions? But I thought, well, I'll be nice to the guy. So we started discussing, and I said, well, I'm going to discuss this in several different ways. We started discussing one of my, I like it, maybe I'm weird. I like DNA. I like understanding that double helix. I like understanding, John Reiner, you're here, the code that's built into one's DNA, that if you take one little, you know, one piece of DNA from one cell, that little cell, one little cell has like an encyclopedia of information. And I talked to the person, I said, you do recognize the smaller we get down to beneath the cellular level to the DNA strand, that has information. Where'd the information come from? And by the way, it doesn't have information like one. It has an encyclopedia of information, one cell. Then I moved from that, and I'm not a math person. I needed Carrie and Mrs. Hall here for that. But I talked about how math, pretty much many people believe that math is kind of not something we use to understand the world. Math is already there. So I said, look at me, look at here. Where does the math come from? Then I moved another level. Michael Bay, irreducible complexity, his concept of molecular machines, that at a cellular level, every cell is like a small machine, and he can illustrate this with all the different little parts. But there's a place where you get so small that if you don't have every single piece of that molecule, guess what? It doesn't function. It could never function. It could never grow into functioning. It doesn't function. It would cease to exist. So I talked to the person for an hour on the phone at a fairly intellectual level. What's the problem? Do you not know? Seriously. His questions weren't intellectual. He really wanted to know, can I continue having sex with my girlfriend? See, you think most questions are about intellectual questions. I love intellectual pursuits. My friend, it came down to something real simple. He wanted to hear all of my ideas, and he was like interested, and I gave him suggestions about books and all this. But when the smoke cleared, you say, did he become a Christian? My friend, you cannot become a Christian by debating things. There has to come a time where you are willing. Let's just look there. John chapter 7. Everybody look with me. John chapter 7. Would you look there, please? John chapter 7, but for time, we'll look at one verse. Everybody find John chapter 7? I think we have things backwards. If I can be honest with you, and I believe fully in, please look, I believe in reasoning with people. I believe in talking to people. I believe in working through things. I believe in persuasion. I believe that answers are important. I remember as a young man struggling with questions, and the people that around me were so uneducated, they had no ability to give a guy that had a brain answers. I get that. But they're also... Let's read this verse. John 7, verse 17. This is the conclusion of the message this morning, friend. Are you there? If any man, and man means what? Person. If anyone or any individual will do his will, is willing to do his will, he or she shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. Do you get the process? The issue is never, I must understand everything in order to believe. No, I must be willing to bow the knee to God's authority, and then I know. One of the ancient theologians said, it's faith in search of understanding. It is always, we must be willing. We must be willing. We must be willing to believe. We must be willing to obey. And if we're not willing to believe and we're not willing to obey, look at me. The discussion is ended. It's over. So why didn't Jesus talk to them and say, I get my authority from the Father. I'm the second person of the Godhead. It wasn't a question like that. It was really... They didn't want to buy into John's message. Why? Because they weren't willing to believe and obey. And by the way, they weren't willing to believe and obey Jesus either. Salvation is never merely an intellectual matter. It's never only about truth. It is always a moral matter about sin, righteousness, and evil. When I talked to this person, I finally got to the heart of the problem an hour into this. Now, I'm going to tell three other short stories, but before I do that, I'm going to tell something about myself so you know me. I got saved at age 9 in a little country church in southern Illinois. In 8th grade, not long after I got saved, I had my introduction to biology. Now, some people are so oblivious to everything, nothing bothers them. I learned about biology and evolution, and I started struggling, even as a believer, with the questions of how does this work? I would talk to people. Nobody had answers. Nobody knew there were books. I joined the United States Navy in 1975. I was 18 years old. I went to school. Look at me. At Parris Island, South Carolina, stationed with the Jarheads, with the Marines, I still remember. I was struggling. I was actually reading a Scofield reference Bible, Genesis chapter 1, and his explanation was there was some kind of gap between Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. And I have now deduced there is a gap. It's not between 1 and 2. It's between people's ears. But I'm reading this, and I'm like, what? And at about 5:30 in the morning, Beaufort, South Carolina, in a trailer that I rented with another guy, I was a Christian, but I realized something. Are you listening? I can still remember physically what I did. I slipped down under the kitchen table on my face and said, God, something to this effect. It's been a long time, 40 plus years. I am willing to wait until I understand. I cannot talk anybody into ever coming to Christ because the issue is not intellectual. By the way, I'll give you the answers. We can talk for hours. I'm willing to do it. I believe in apologetics, giving answers and giving reasons. But when the smoke clears, it always comes down to this. Am I willing? And if you're not, Jesus is not going to deal much with you. By the way, if you're willing and you'll bow the knee, by the way, the bowing of the knee happens before any faith and repentance. See, we want to play a little game in America. You know, got Jesus in my back pocket, everything is cool. No, it always comes down to the same thing. Let me say this. I've seen people visit this church. I've been here 20 plus years. I remember seeing a guy sitting about where Tim is sitting. Came and visited. I have no idea what I was preaching on. It wasn't anything bad. And the guy was, he was making me nervous moving. And some people think, well, Pastor Warren must have been mean that morning. He never came back. What was he thinking about? I don't know. But I do know this. Parris Island again. I'm talking to a guy that works at with the Marines with me. He's a corpsman like I was. He works with the Marines. He asked me for a ride. I'd witnessed to this guy over and over at the dispensary. He says, give me a ride back to the barracks. I said, okay. From Parris Island, you have to wind out on this long kind of a bridge. It's not exactly a bridge. What do they call it? Built up, and it's, you get off. Then I had to drive to the Naval Hospital, and all that way I talked to him about the Lord, talked to him about getting saved. And I used to think, if I just have the right plan, 1, 2, 3, people just... I prayed for this guy. I witnessed the guy the whole way back. We got back, and I said, do you want to trust Christ? And he just flipped his head and looked at me. You've heard the question if you've been in this church. He said, he just blurted it out. Does this mean I have to quit having sex with my girlfriend? Look at me. He got it. He got it. Because there is no salvation checklist. Saved, going to heaven, bye-bye, Jesus. Have a good life. Bowing the knee always precedes faith and obedience. Are you willing? Are you willing to believe? Are you willing to obey? If you are, you'll understand. If you're not, let me flip it another way. This happened to me at First Baptist Church of Danville. I was teaching, of all things, on child rearing. I had a woman that, as opposed to some people here, she actually listened to me. She had two responses to me that day. The first response, she came up to me after one of my sessions and said to me, "I hate my daughter." That's not a normal response, is it? But it wasn't for what you thought. She says, "I grew up in a home where my father abused me sexually." And she said, "I hate my daughter because she's growing up in a home where the dad loves her." At the end of the service, I think I spoke four times, she came to me and she said this, "Pastor Warren, are you listening? Does this mean I have to forgive my dad?" She got it. The issue is not how I preach. The issue is one issue. By what authority? They knew. If we say John came from heaven, that means I got to believe and I have to obey what he said. They got it. And my friend, if anyone, man or woman, is willing, if you're willing to believe and obey, sooner or later you'll understand sufficiently. Look at me. But it never happens this way. "God, show me everything, and I'll get around to believing and obeying." Oh, no. Am I willing to do this? So I'm going to ask you a question this morning. The game players in this room, have you ever bowed the knee? Yes or no? There is no salvation without doing this. It's always about authority. The first question in the Bible of this nature was, "Yea, hath God said?" And the answer is, "Yes, he has." And my friend, Christianity is a group of people, yes, who have trusted Christ, yes, who follow Christ, but before all of that, they had to submit to his authority. Let's pray. Father, I thank you this morning.